ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
This is Medialand, your weekly look at what's going on behind the scenes and on your screens. On ABC Radio National, I'm Tim Burrows.
And I'm Vivian Kelly.
Now, Viv, have you ever thought to yourself, what Australia needs is fewer companies owning all of the radio stations?
Tim, you know that that's my first thought when I wake up each morning and before I go to sleep each night.
Well, that is lucky then in that case, because the chairman of ARN Media, now they're the people who own stations like Kiss FM and Gold FM, they'd love to buy some more stations if only it wasn't for the pesky media ownership law. Hamish McLennan, one of the big beasts of Australian media, joins us soon to talk about the future of radio.
And where are you going to be able to watch NRL in the future? We'll get into sports rights in the streaming era.
First up, a Medialand exclusive. It appears that one of the more ill-conceived media adventures of recent years is over. Disrupt Radio is facing an application for a winding up order, even though they launched with a very expensive bang in Bob Geldof.
Part of the thing about Disrupt Radio is that Ben, the guy who's been working on it for 5 years, just believes that the news has become so binary, so shouty, so about really nothing, and that a different generation just want different things. They want to be told what's going on. They want discussions about it. It's about the now and what's coming rather than about old stuff from the past.
Well, I suppose if you haven't heard of Disrupt, then that's the problem, isn't it, Viv?
I suspect far more people have heard of Bob Geldof, who we just heard talking then, than have heard of Disrupt Radio. It launched into the landscape in a streaming capacity on DAB, but obviously not enough people found it or wanted to listen to its content.
Which is, I guess, not surprising because it was such a niche, wasn't it? A radio station that only talked about business and startups, but with all of the expenses of running a radio station.
It was quite a difficult sell, I would say, and they really threw money at it. They also had Australian presenter Libby Gore and Jules Lund on the roster. There were big names in there.
Yeah, and there were some big names behind the scenes. The founder, you heard Bob Geldof refer to Ben, that was Benjamin Roberts, had come out of the radio industry previously. Michelle Guthrie, a former managing director of the ABC, she was one of the directors of the business. So there were people who should have known the media landscape.
Well, it obviously didn't find enough of an audience, because by being on DAB, we could see that at certain points it only had 4,000 listeners in Sydney, 1,000 in Melbourne, and fewer than 1,000 in Brisbane, according to the official measurement system.
They got the dreaded asterisk, which means zero.
Advertisers probably aren't going to throw money at that, are they, if they can only access 1,000-odd people?
And we know that they didn't. They'd only brought in $300,000 worth of advertising in their first year. And while they were bringing in that $300,000, they were spending $5 million.
It's a very expensive operation, though, if you're going to do a full, proper radio broadcast. Could they not have just done a podcast, bought a microphone online, sat down at their computers? People keep saying anyone with a microphone can create a show. Perhaps they just didn't need to spend millions of dollars on it.
Well, I think that's it. And of course, by the end, that was where they ended up. You know, it died slowly. You know, first of all, they had to turn off the DAB signal when the people that they were licensing it from took it away from them and kicked them out of the studio, which was SCN Radio. So they did then go to just online streaming. By then, they weren't paying their staff, though, so they weren't able to do new shows, so they were just replaying old stuff.
They're not the only ones trying something different in that radio and broadcasting space. Bit of a declaration of interest for me. There is another alternative out there called Broad Radio, which targets women over 35, and I have done some work with them in the past when they were getting ready to upscale their launch. It was started by Joe Stanley, who was previously a very successful broadcaster. They've got other identities such as Marie Cardi and Michaela Bannis, Tracy Hutchison, who was a former Triple J identity. They do some live radio shows. I guess that does work in the sense that Broad Radio is targeting women who want to have real conversations. about the realities of and complexities of life, that feels more broad than Disrupt Radio, which was targeting a business niche. We do need new voices, though. We do need alternatives, particularly with the consolidation that's happening in the mainstream media. I guess it just depends if the audience is going to follow them.
Look, we will talk more radio with ARN Media's chairman, Hamish McLennan, who joins us shortly.
Before we get there, though, Tim, it's NRL broadcast rights season, where broadcasters start bidding to pay the sports body not only for who gets to screen the games, but also who gets to air all of those gambling ads.
And let's face it, that's what pays for those rights. Now, we have known for a little while that the biggest local prize in TV sports rights will soon be back on the block, as it is every few years. This week, Peter Volandes, who's the chairman of NRL, effectively fired the starting pistol. Not that you can fire starting pistols at an NRL game. I think those do Hooters or something. Although this won't be until the 2027 season, he told the Daily Telegraph this week that he wants the deal wrapped up by the middle of this year. For NRL, Nine have always had the rights, along with Foxtel. They did a massive five-year, billion-dollar deal in 2012. And then in 2015, they sneaked in another one, which was got closer to $2 billion. And that was then extended again during COVID in 2021. This time, though, it's going to be different. It won't just be Nine for the free-to-air, Foxtel for the pay rights in the fight. There'll be loads more as well.
And by loads more, do you mean international companies like Netflix, Amazon? Are they even allowed to broadcast the NRL, though? Surely it needs to remain on free-to-air for people who want to see it.
Well, this is the super intriguing thing about last year's change to the anti-siphoning laws, which are the rules around who gets first bidding rights for that content. It now only covers broadcast. So if you want to license out your broadcast rights, you first of all have to offer it to one of the free-to-air players if you're a sporting code. But the rules do not cover streaming. So a deal that only did streaming, the likes of Netflix could swoop in if they had dollars and appetite enough.
Well, I think they have more dollars. They might not have more appetite than Australian TV networks, but they definitely have more dollars. So is that a fair fight? I mean, Australia's television networks totally rely on sport to maintain their audience. Without live sport, their viewership would be way down.
Absolutely. It's sport and news are the two things that reliably rate. And I think that's the valuable thing for the broadcasters, not only as an audience, but there are all of those predictable breaks in the game and all of those things where that advertising can be played in. But equally for the platforms, it's attractive because it's a way of bringing in a new potential audience as well. Maybe people who aren't subscribing already.
How do we determine what sports people should be able to see or need to see? It seems to be like certain things are in the public interest. I know when the Matildas were playing in the Women's World Cup recently, there was a big discussion because they were doing so well and suddenly everybody's wanting to see every match that they play. And people found that some of them were paywalled. If you didn't have Foxtel, you couldn't see it. And there seemed to be a bit of a panic, like, oh, we should all be able to access this. It should be on free to air. And there was a bit of shuffling.
Yeah.
Is there going to be a panic if NRL, which is one of the most popular sports in New South Wales, is suddenly on a service that you have to pay for?
Well, that's a great example because that one, in fact, it was Optus who held the rights. And they then, they didn't have to, but they chose to license some of those games to Seven because they saw the outrage that would have been, you know, if imagine if Australia had not been able to watch Courtney Vine score that penalty that got the Matildas through to the final because it was locked behind the Optus paywall. There would have been complete outrage. Yet the law would have allowed that to happen. So there are gaps, and I think we're really going to see it tested with this set of NRL deals, particularly if the streamers come in. Now, if, for instance, Nine goes at it, which they inevitably will, they'll go for all of the rights because they own Stan as the streamer as well. So if it goes that way, we won't have that controversy. But if it goes in another direction, we may see a lot of it locked away, more than before. And of course, the job of Peter Volandis and NRL is just to get the highest possible bid. You know, I have a feeling they could be looking for $1 billion a year this time around.
Are you saying that the NRL's audience is not top of mind while these deals are being made? It's all about dollars. I can't believe it.
I'm always nervous whenever you start a sentence with, are you saying? But yes, I am saying exactly that. The Australian radio landscape had its first shake-up of the year this week with the departure of ARN Media's chief content officer, Duncan Campbell, as part of a bigger restructure. He was one of the people who masterminded the poaching of Kyle Sanderlands and Jackie O from Sydney's Today FM to launch the KISS FM radio network a decade ago. Now, along with KISS, ARN Media are also the people behind the Gold Network.
Yeah, Tim, and last year, ARN Media tried to buy its biggest rival and competitor, Southern Cross Oz Stereo, who run the Hit and Triple M networks, as well as a large amount of stations in the regions. So far, that's failed.
So far.
I did say so far, but it hasn't hurt their appetite to buy some more radio stations, if they are allowed. This week, the chairman of ARN Media, Hamish McLennan, called for the media ownership laws to be changed.
Now, the big question around that, of course, is what it would mean for a diversity of media voices in Australia. So here to tackle that question and to explain why he wants the law changed is ARN Media's boss, Hamish McLennan. Welcome to Medialand.
Thank you for having me.
Hamish, we'll start there. You already own two radio networks. Last year you tried to buy Southern Cross Oz Stereo, and this week you've said you'd be interested in buying Nine's talk stations, including 2GB in Sydney and 3AW in Melbourne. Do you feel like you don't have enough radio stations already?
The media landscape is more competitive than ever, and I think the point to some of my comments at the beginning of the week revolved around the fact that the overseas tech giants, whether it be Spotify, Google, Facebook, Netflix, are providing intense competition, and we are locally owned and run, and we create our own content. And the previous laws that were created last century by, you know, various governments are just completely out of date. So really the thrust behind what we're looking at doing is that we want to stay committed to being live and local. And don't forget, we have over 46 regional radio stations where we are the last media there. So we
last commercial media.
Well, that is true, along with the ABC. But my point being is that newspapers have been decimated. A lot of television is networked, and we need to get scale to compete and to remain profitable. And so we want that local content where we're hiring people in local markets, regional and metro markets, but we need scale to compete with those overseas tech giants.
But doesn't that mean just less media voices if you end up owning yet another network?
I would argue that there's more voices and more content out there than ever before. So if you look at the ability for a person on the street to be able to proffer their point of view, there's tons of diversity out there at the moment.
Hamish, you mentioned live and local there, but one of your radio networks, KISS, has recently syndicated the Sydney-based breakfast show Kyle and Jackie O into KISS in Melbourne. So that ticks one box. It is live. They do come into the studio at 6 o'clock each morning. It would be pretty hard to argue that it's local though, wouldn't it?
Look, we have local news. We employ people right across all of our networks in those markets. So we're looking for efficiencies, and there's incredible cost pressure. So the concept of networking is not a new thought. So, you know, our competitors do afternoon shows from Melbourne. So I guess what we're looking for is a competitive advantage. We've made a huge financial commitment to Kyle and Jackie O, and we need to get a payback for that too. But don't forget, there are a whole lot of administrative staff, salespeople that service each of those markets. So we're proudly Australian, and we want to continue in that regard.
So while we're on the subject of the Kyle and Jackie O show, the first stage of the national strategy was to expand that show to Melbourne. Ratings have been terrible for that first year. What did you not get right? What didn't you think about that if you had your time again, you'd do something differently?
you know, I think in some regard, the guys might have pushed the envelope too hard. I think I lived in Melbourne. I think it is a distinct market, and so we haven't got the content platform right. But we've also, from a board point of view, got a very realistic view that'll take 2 to 3 years to get that right. And if you look at Christian O'Connell, who we brought out from the UK, again, into the Melbourne market, it took 18 months for him to become the number one radio presenter there. So these things take time, so we'll keep working it until we get it right.
Both yourself, Hamish, just now, and the former Chief Content Officer of ARN Media, Duncan Campbell, have at various points mentioned that perhaps you haven't got the content right and that you are looking at adjusting that. Each time that happens, though, you also have an advertisement running in Melbourne's, you know, saying we're behaving now from Kyle and Jackie. Kyle then tends to go on air and almost make fun of the bosses of ARN and how they're trying to get him to behave and they'll never be able to get him to behave. He plays snippets from podcasts talking about the smut on his show and he comes for those hosts. In fact, honestly, we might be in the firing line now talking about him. So do you actually have any control?
Look, I think you've got to accept that Kyle and Jackie O are performers at the end of the day. And so that's part of his shtick. The board doesn't wade too much into editorial content, and that's not dissimilar from a lot of media companies that are out there at the moment.
I guess the moment when it comes up to board level is when the Australian Communications and Media Authority show an interest, which belatedly they have. We had that moment in Senate estimates last year when Nerida O'Loughlin, the chair of the ACMA, refused to read out a transcript of the KNJ show. Now, we did actually discuss inviting you to read out a transcript, but we decided that would be a bit too much of a stunt, so we didn't. But
also, we wouldn't be allowed to broadcast a lot of the things if we did print off the transcript.
Yes, so if you'd called our bluff and read it out, then probably we wouldn't have been able to. But I suppose my question is, would you be comfortable playing that show in your car with family in the car?
Look, some of that stuff I wince at too, and we've had those conversations with Kyle, you know, and we're fully aware of our obligations with the ACMA, and we take that very, very seriously. We have censors who sit and listen to the program. I apologise if it goes over the mark from time to time, but if you do compare it to what's out there on the social platforms and the internet, the stuff being spewed out is terrible. So I'm not abrogating any responsibility, and we have obligations to our shareholders and our listeners, and ultimately our listeners can turn the dial off. So again, I don't want to sound defensive in that regard, but there are a lot of people. I mean, there's some of the most popular radio presenters in the country, and a lot of people love that content too. So we live in a free speech world. We understand our obligations, as I said before, with ACMA. But also, I think listeners need to look at what's out there generally in media land, which also comes back to what sort of environment are we regulated in and what's fair. And again, look at the social platforms.
Just because the internet is abhorrent, though, surely that can't be our baseline. That can't be an excuse, because if that's our aim, oh, just be better than the cesspit that is the internet, then Australian media, you know, isn't aiming very high.
I think it's a relative measure, though. And if you look at how persuasive those platforms are, and just look at the recent election with Trump and Biden in the US too, they're incredibly influential. And I look at my kids who are in their 20s now, and I feel so sorry for the younger kids that have all that social pressure going on at the moment. So they are real, they are persuasive, they are economic machines, and we're governed by a different set of rules.
Let's talk about that a bit, because the global tech platforms are all coming into Australia. They've come into Australia, Spotify, Amazon. How should the Australian radio industry be reacting to that?
Well, if you compare them to us, so we pay our taxes locally. You know, we've got over 1,200 staff right across all of our radio businesses across the country. And we have to deliver a return to our shareholders in that regard. They operate at a fraction of the workforce, and their commitment to the local market is not as great. So if I'm a television network, I've got local content obligations around news, drama, sport and so forth, and they actually don't. And so if you think of all the content people who have lost their jobs outside of radio, TV, you think the pressure on journalism, I think it's a real worry long-term for our democracy in the country.
Hamish, you mentioned earlier this week your interest in perhaps acquiring Nine Radio assets, including the talkback stations 2GB in Sydney and 3AW in Melbourne. I can see what would be in that for you and for your shareholders. It's other revenue opportunities. It's a different type of content. What would be in it for the audience, though, if ARN was to own those stations?
Over the long term, across different platforms and different styles. So if you look at Kyle and Jackie O versus Christian versus Amanda and Jonesy, they've got editorial freedom in that regard. They all do. And so we would ensure that that happens. It enables us to get scale, share resources, and run the businesses profitably. And we are dedicated to audio and we're really focused in that regard. So my comments, more than anything, were designed to say those radio businesses within the Nine Group, which is a really large media conglomerate, are very, very small. So, but they would get the attention from us that I think they deserve.
What are your hopes of actually getting the law changed? Because every time there's media law reform, it takes ages. There's an election coming. I presume there's no chance of getting it done that side of an election.
Oh, look, as you know, Tim, I was at Channel 10 from 13 to 15, and we were talking about media law reform then, and depressingly, I don't hold that much hope. But I think the listeners need to understand there are Australian jobs on the line with what's happening. And so these are archaic laws that don't make sense.
It's all very complicated, as you say. What, though, do you see as the real future for Australian radio?
I think, ultimately, consolidation is an inevitability. So there are going to continue to be cost pressures in our sector. Having said that, I feel that the medium is very relevant. You'll see more podcasting, more streaming, and greater diversity and opportunities for listeners to, you know, get great content that's out there.
I have a feeling one of the themes of this year is going to be talking about changes within radio. Hamish McLennan, thank you so much for joining us.
Pleasure.
Well, there was a lot to unpack there, Viv, but I guess one question is, would changes to media laws actually be good for the public? I'm not 100% convinced.
I'm not 100% convinced that Hamish McLennan has that top of mind. Every response he had was about his shareholders, and that's who his obligation is to. I think people who listen to radio might think it's being made for them, but I think Hamish's responses there made it quite clear that they think about the audience in terms of its ability to generate advertising dollars, its obligations, its strategy, its priority is money-making. It's not producing content that best serves every individual who might happen to be listening to the radio.
But I suppose the key thing, which he makes a genuinely good point, is it is better for the audiences if these Australian organisations can exist and survive. There's a kind of cliche when it talks about media, which is, you'll miss us when we're gone, is not a business model. And that could be the case with Australian radio if they don't get to make some of these moves. And something is a lot better than nothing.
I guess I see what you mean about something being better than nothing. But if ARN Media does buy the Nine radio stations, Nine Radio is much more in the news game rather than the entertainment game. We're heading into an election year. If ARN Media did gobble up Nine Radio and those talk stations, would that influence how the election is talked about? Again, it would be one fewer companies in terms of the diversity of voices there giving us information ahead of an election. Would that make you nervous?
I mean, yes, in a perfect world, you would want every single radio station, every single TV network owned by somebody different for this massive diversity of voices. But the truth of the matter is most advertising dollars that fund media are now flowing offshore. They're going to the big platforms, to your Googles, to your Metas. So some consolidated media companies that are still Australian, Australian headquartered, Australian run with Australian jobs, if they have to be bigger to do that, then maybe that's the least bad option. I think it is.
Will the audiences get the information they need, though? I mean, we know that they don't get great information from those big platforms. Meta is removing fact-checking. There seems to be a big push towards free speech in inverted commas, where people can say whatever they like unchecked. I guess the good thing about Australian media organisations is they are held to a higher standard. They do have watchdogs. They do have regulations. If we wind everything back and wind back those media ownership laws, are we just allowing them to devolve in the same way that the platforms have?
Yes, but I don't see a better option.
Well, that is an optimistic take on the Australian media landscape, Tim.
That's what I do, Viv. All right, any other business?
Well, Tim, I know you had a meeting with News Corp earlier this week. Strange question from me, but out of interest, what shirt did you wear to that meeting?
Well, to the point, I have meetings with all sorts of media organisations every single day because it's my job. But yes, I did happen to wander into the News Corp building in Holt Street wearing a plain black T-shirt because I'm from the media industry.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's both predictable and disappointing. I assume you saw the shirt worn by former Australian of the Year Grace Tame to a morning tea with the Prime Minister, which was a bit more evocative than your black uniform.
It was. And before I say what was on it, I know that I do have to give a language warning. So if you do happen to have people of young or delicate sensibility near the speaker and you don't want them to hear a word that begins with F, now is the moment to tune away.
Well, now that the children are no longer with us.
This is a big build-up for quite a minor thing, isn't it?
We can say that the shirt read, "Fuck Murdoch." And while Prime Minister Anthony Albanese didn't seemingly say anything at the time, he later said it was a distraction.
It was clearly designed to get attention. I don't intend to add to that attention because I do think that it takes away from what the day should be about.
Well, it certainly got the coverage everywhere.
Yeah, but I feel like a lot of the coverage was so focused on the word fuck and whether or not that was an appropriate T-shirt to wear, whether it was an appropriate stance from our former Australian of the Year, rather than going into the details of what her protest may have been about, what may have driven her decision to get the attention to say fuck Murdoch and what she was pushing for. So much of it is about, oh, can we say the F word? Should we blur it out? I saw articles where, you know, her chest is all blurry. And that seems to be more of the discussion rather than what is the former Australian of the Year who is known for protesting and known for changing the public discourse. What is she trying to say? They're so focused on the controversy of the word fuck rather than the controversy of the idea that Grace Tame is advocating for, which is perhaps that Rupert Murdoch, who runs News Corp, has had
Days doesn't run it, but he's the emeritus chair.
Yes, I think we can all agree that Rupert Murdoch has an impact on News Corp. And I think the point she was making,
unless of course she was referring to Lachlan Murdoch.
I think we know it was Rupert. I think you are spending too much time, like the Australian media, dissecting the wrong part of this T-shirt.
I am easily
protest.
Distracted, Viv.
You are deliberately not engaging with the point that Grace Tame is trying to make about Rupert Murdoch's undue influence on elections and the media narrative, and that's what she was doing, rather than just trying to swear for the sake of swearing.
Yeah, I totally agree, and she pulled it off brilliantly. Here we are, everyone's been talking about it, and that conversation would not have been happening in that way this week if she hadn't worn that T-shirt.
And that's why she was Australian of the Year in 2021. She gets us all talking.
Well, we have to leave it there. But remember to follow Medialand on the ABC Listen app so you never miss an episode.
And we'd love to hear from you. We are new and we need to know how we're going. So what did you think of this episode and our chat with ARN's boss? Email us at medialand@abc.net.au. We'll catch you same time next week and in your feeds. Later, Tim.
Toodlepip, Viv.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.